Welcome to episode 185 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, the only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. As always, this is Billy, your host. Once again, the homestead honey can't be with us tonight. She is going at 100 miles an hour, plus her back is killing her right now. We're going to have to go to the chiropractor tomorrow for both of us, and I'm not kidding. All right, this episode is always brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap. From twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Heaven's Harvest, 10% off with promo code PERMA. And remember, handle all your preparedness needs on your own. Everything you can't source, go check them out. You'll be glad you did. And once again, 10% off with promo code PERMA. And if you would like to tip a pimp, do it over there on the Fountain app. You can listen to all your podcasts over there. You can even triple up the speed. And if you'd like to drop a derivation of Bitcoin on a player, you can do it over there on the Fountain app. So if you want to tip a pimp, or as my good buddy says,
tip a pimp,
do it right over there on the Fountain app. All right, y'all, got way more energy than I've had the last couple of shows. Sorry about that. It might account for the fact that I just ate an entire pint of chocolate ice cream from the place in town, and I am tripping. Anything, look, if I have any stimulant of any type after, let's say, 2 o'clock, it's going to be a late night, nephew. So it's going to be one of those things, but at least I got some energy and I'm feeling pretty doggone good. But in fairness, with all this rain and everything, I haven't really had much of a chance to really get out and work any steam off, so it's going to be twice as bad. So, hey, I'm thinking about the consequences later. That chocolate ice cream was off the meat wagon. So if you ever find yourself in Mars Hill, North Carolina, I'm talking, look, y'all, the best ice cream around. And I can't even think of the doggone place right now. I've talked about them a million times, but anyway, I'll hit them up another time. All right, so I'm going to jump right into farm news. And this one's kind of important. Well, they're always important. So we're getting tons of rain right now, which is uncharacteristic for us to get it like this. One beautiful thing about living in this this temperate rainforest, rather, is that typically when it rains, it's almost never what we experienced in Texas or Oklahoma or Kansas or Nebraska. It's usually a torrential downpour, and then you'll go with long bouts where you have nothing. Well, here over the last couple of days, it's been kind of reminiscent of that. So you can use that rain as a barometer to find out what your soil's doing. Now, driving up and down the road, I had to go to the post office, drop off a bunch of stuff. And as I'm going there, I'm looking at all the places around us. Now, we live in very steep terrain, so whatever soil issues you have are going to really make themselves manifest as you're driving along, because if you see a bunch of soil going out in the road, well, it's a clear indication that you got some issues, unless it's coming off the driveway. Like in our case, 99% of it, of any runoff we have, is really coming from the driveway, which is something I'm hoping to remedy here before too long. But if at your place you have a high rain event and you're seeing all the soil or dirt, brown water going down the road, well, it tells you right there your infiltration isn't wonderful. So it should also tell you, got work to do. And then that should also lead you to the work of people like Gabe Brown, people like Jeff Lawton, people like Greg Judy. I mean, the list is it's very, very long. Elaine Ingham, you name it. And that's really what you notice when you drive through these mountains. When you have a high rain event, there's a lot of people with a whole lot of cows in an area. They don't really move them, so that's going to be a problem. And so you're going to see all this dirt coming off the hill. Well, that's our biggest export, y'all. It's dirt. That's our biggest export from this country. It's not even soil anymore. I can't even call it that. It's dirt. What used to be soil, all the topsoil is just washing away. And it has a lot to do with our practices. So that's exactly what we want to focus on, not only on the YouTube channel, because that's more of our instructional arm, but also to a certain degree right here in the podcast as well. I want to cover those things because if you see that happening, then it's a wake-up call to say, okay, how do I arrest this? How do I keep the soil here, even in a high rain event? And once again, I'm going to go back. Greg Judy 101, if you see bare soil out there, drop some hay on it. Run some animals on it. It'll make it go even, a cloven hoof will always, you know, expand the soil. So it makes it porous. It does a whole lot of things. You don't always have to have animals back there, out there, but it'll always make a big difference. But it's a double-edged sword. Do you leave them out there like so many people do, where they just leave them in this field, they'll let them eat up all the grass, and then once the grass is gone, then they start on the hay, and then most people you'll see are feeding hay a majority of the year when you should not have to do that, unless you're revitalizing or rejuvenating or creating soil or trying to. You're partnering with your microbes using that hay, but you want to get yourself off what Jim Gerrish calls the hay habit. So watch that runoff. I mean, it makes all the difference in the world, but rain is also a really good thing in identifying other problems. I mean, like whether or not you got leaks on your house, which we've seemed to have sprung a couple, but it also tells you like on your road surfaces and stuff like that, which has been a massive thorn in my side since I got here. I mean, the road was never put in right, was never in the right place. You put a road on a spur. You don't put it in places where they typically put them. And a lot of the people that do this work are just trying to get paid, and they don't care what the long-term implications might be. So use rain as a barometer, mostly for your, I mean, you use it for so many other things. Obviously, you want to see where it falls. Can you capture it? Can you amplify it? Can you deflect it? Can you put it where you need it? Obviously, all those things. But when you see these high rain events, it's not necessarily the time to just kind of stow away in your house unless you live in Oklahoma and Texas this time of year, and you got to be watching out for twisters. But if you can, go out there and observe what is happening when you see a rain event like this. What happens when you have a high wind event? You want to notice those things. You want to pay attention to those things. You want to find out, where does the water pull? Where does it gather? Do I have infiltration? Go out there and just observe. Use your five senses. In the Army, we used to call it SILS. S-L-L-S. It stands for stop, look, listen, and smell. So what you want to do, you can use the same exact tactic on your farm. So just kind of walk through it with me. If you're driving, don't do this, but you'll get the point. Try it later. And it works, especially, you use it in a tactical setting for very different reasons, but I adapted it to the farm also. So you go out there, you put your stop, okay? When you look, cover your ears. Don't use your sense of hearing, okay? Just use your eyes and look around, not hearing anything, because you're going to heighten your sensitivity of vision. Okay. Stop, look, listen. Now you're going to close your eyes and you're going to hear. And you don't want to just do it for a couple of seconds. If you can, try to do it for about a minute. It's a good practice to get into anyway. Stop, look, listen, and then smell with your eyes still closed. Okay. Just smell. Cover your ears up too if you can. Do all these things when you have any kind of event. I mean, if there's life or limb on the line, obviously you don't want to do those things, but it makes all the difference in the world because you may very well hear water falling in a place that you would never observe without deadening some of your senses. So use that, SILS, S-L-L-S, stop, look, listen, and smell. All right, so I spent a lot of time on that. Other things we got going on around here is freeze drying. And I know I talk about it all the time, but man, I'm not kidding y'all. It's a full court press. I hear everybody going about Bitcoin, about gold, about silver. And yeah, I have some of those things. And they're probably good things to have. But above those things, obviously you want to make sure your soul is in order, first of all. So I would highly encourage everybody out there, if you haven't already, you might want to discover what God did by sending his only begotten son to die for your sins. And then right after that, you might want to think about water and food. it's all the way back in the story of Joseph. I mean, you could shake some, I mean, I would never encourage such a thing, but honestly, I can't even tell you how many people I know in the preparedness community where they're good on food, they're good on radio equipment, They're good on vehicles. They're good on backup this and that, but they have about a month's worth of food. Think that might be a little bit backwards, because I sure do. I mean, good night. I mean, you could shake somebody down for all the change in their pocket if they haven't eaten in a couple of days. So make sure you prioritize the things that are most important. So that's where, you know, whether you're canning, whether you're freeze drying, whatever the case may be, not everybody's going to be able to, you know, amass the expense of a freeze dryer. But if you can, no matter what you do, whether it's dehydrator, I mean, whatever the case is, y'all, I would highly encourage everybody as much as you can in these crazy times to put as much back as you possibly can. So what's the worst that happens? Let's just say we get through this manufactured calamity and you're no worse for wear. Okay, well, now you got a good reason to go camping and eat up all that freeze-dried food, whatever the case may be. You may want to do those things anyway with your mutual assistance group or your preparedness group anyway. Knock some of that stuff off the shelf. And, you know, what is the worst that could possibly happen? So, yeah, it's a really good way to take that harvest, too, that comes in. So think about those things. I mean, whether it's freeze-drying, canning. My friend Robert, honestly, every day he'd go to work and he would, it was the coolest thing. His mom was from Poland. And every single day in the winter, I remember especially, at least when I was around him, he would bust open a can of something that she had canned. It was the coolest thing. So that's what he would have for his lunch. I mean, eat a quart of whatever it was she made. I thought that was brilliant. So that's another way you can go about it too. Let's see. Okay, rainy day. So I'm not exactly outside doing what I would prefer to do. So look. There's one of these tricks. I was actually going to do a video on it a while back. So it's raining outside. Okay. When you come from a construction background, anybody's going to tell you that came from that world is, depending on the job, you don't always get to do it this way. But on those rainy days, I would bank when I'm running work. If I got inside and outside work, of course, the guys always want to work inside. But in the construction world, you don't get paid when you get rained out. You don't get paid vacation or anything like that. It doesn't work that way for us. So what I would try to do is bank all the indoor work, and it wasn't always possible, but when you can, you bank your indoor work for those rainy days when you can't do anything outside. So the same, we do exactly the same tactic here. So that thing I've been putting off forever and a day, like rotating the freezers. And what I mean by that is okay, you know the prepper mantra is two is one, one is none. Okay, so we got a bunch of freezers out there, and I don't ever put everything all in one because let's just say you have a giant calamity. In fact, I always like to leave one completely empty if I can, or have the equivalent of one that's empty. And yeah, I've been slipping. So I had to get that done today, and that took a couple hours. And it was one of those jobs, man, I just really didn't want to do. I've been putting it off for weeks. But I finally got that done. And I would highly encourage you to maybe do the same. If you have more than one freezer, you don't necessarily want to, yeah, you if you can, you want to fill it to the brim. But it, as you get more freezers when you're able, and which, by the way, y'all, I usually go to those places where you get them rebuilt. You're going to get them for way cheaper. And they usually put a brand new compressor in a lot of them. So it's going to last a lot longer than anything off the shelf anyway. So, yeah, if you can, always leave one back in reserve in case one craps out on you. And I remember during the height of the sweet and sour sniffles, when that was all going on, good night, man. You couldn't find a freezer to save your life. In fact, I had to bribe a kid over there at Lowe's to get a freezer. It was the craziest thing in the world. I mean, yeah, so everybody seems to have forgotten, not everybody, but for the most part, it seems like everybody's forgotten about all the things we couldn't find when you really needed them at the height of COVID. So before the next calamity unfolds or whatever, manufactured, whatever they're going to pull, maybe if you can, if you got a few extra bucks, like I said, I've been doing it for years, y'all. And anytime I need a freezer, my number one choice is usually going to be one of those places where there's some old guy in there, really knows what he's doing. And he could take one of those old fridge freezer combos or one that's just a straight up freezer. Find out the ones that have the brand new compressors on them. And that's the ones you want to get, because the ones that they have that you get straight out of the store, look, words of the day, planned obsolescence. That's exactly what they do. All right, so other things going on around here. Michelle's been, well, the reason her back is jacked up, she was out there digging a bunch of comfrey. Yeah, folks, I'm hoping to get to the point where I can't even sell this stuff. That's when I told you that before, I know it's an awful business model, but it is so valuable to us, and we can't grow enough of it. And I'm hoping people, you get it from us, you never got to buy it again, propagate it, give it to everybody you know. This is one of those things that we need to make it so ubiquitous. When you consider all the wonderful things comfrey does, whether it's in your compost piles, in your animals, you can't beat it. And it seems like people are starting to wake up to it. So, yeah, that's been full tilt boogie on that. And also making bone sauce, I'm probably coming to the teetery-tottery end of all that. I'm going to try to make more when I can, but, hey, I'm a farmer first, y'all. So please understand. And I know there's been some disappointed people when we run out of things, but, hey, we're doing what we can, y'all. We literally work from dawn till dusk, and then we're still working. So, yeah. Hey, but I love what I do. How about that? All right. So let me just cover this other one here. Somebody, I don't know if it was in the last video I did. I can't remember where, but I wanted to address it. And somebody made mention that planting nitrogen fixtures out there is just a waste of space if you have a small area. Well, I respectfully disagree. And part of the reason that you're even making that comment is because you are raised like me in a reductionistic world, in a Western culture, and everything we do is in a reductionistic sense. Okay, you got high blood pressure, let's give you some pill. Oh, here's some lisinopril. You have a lisinopril depletion in your body. Let's give you some of that. Yeah. Or I have this problem. Well, let's get back to the root cause of it. No, I don't want to do that. I want to put some diazinon on it. Look, that's the world we live in a Western culture. And if we are going, what you learn in permaculture, of course, I'm simplifying it, but you'll get the point. What you learn in permaculture is everything goes right back to the soil. It really does. I mean, Fukuoka 101, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, One Straw Revolution by Masanobu Fukuoka. It all goes back to the soil. When the soil's on point, and I'm not saying it's going to solve all your problems, but a lot of them, it will. But we think in a reductionistic world, and we're thinking, oh, well, I'm taking a room with a nitrogen-fixing tree out here. That doesn't make any sense. Well, you can have nitrogen fixers that do more than one job. Not only is it fixing nitrogen, which it's kind of a misnomer. It doesn't actually fix. I won't get too heady right now or too egghead about it, but it creates nitrogen fixation to happen with the microbes that are beneath the soil, okay? That's what that plant, I'm simplifying it when I say it takes atmospheric nitrogen and puts it down in your soil. There's a little bit more to it, but that's generally what happens. But with those nitrogen fixtures, guess what else it does? All the beneficial bugs that are going to be your allies, or Stefan, he's always getting on to me about that. I'll say beneficial insects because they're not bugs. We tend to think of a bug as a pejorative, but all these beneficial insects are usually going to find a home right there in your nitrogen fixtures or somewhere nearby. Well, all of the bugs that want to attack your fruit tree, guess what? They got to walk through that minefield to get to that tree or the ground cover they're walking across. Let's say it's clover, whatever the case may be. That's why when we think of things and we're thinking, oh, shoot, I'm just wasting space putting a nitrogen fixture out there. Well, pick your poison. Because it's either use your allies in nature or create the synthetic ones or use the synthetic ones better yet. Got news for you. Every time you put anything synthetic out there, it turns into a salt, goes down into your soil. Most of it isn't even a bioavailable for your fruit trees or your whatever it is you're growing. That's why if you always have a natural way of doing things, you're going to find out that nature, if you just take one step in the direction of how nature does it, you're going to get 10 steps right back to you. Now, it may not happen overnight. Let's say you got bare ground out there. Okay, so what would nature do? Nature would cover that up. So if I go out there with a bale of hay and I cover up that patch out there, which I got a few out in my own place right now. So I go out there, I cover it up. What's going to happen? The first thing that comes back might very well be a weed. But if you stay on top of it, that weed's not going to have a home, because what we call weeds are only there because of our mismanagement. There's either too much or too little of something, or compaction, whatever the case may be. It's usually nature trying to give you a hint to do it right. So pick your poison. I can go out there and waste spaces, a person might say, with a nitrogen fixer, whether it be a bush. But there's also a lot of edible nitrogen fixers out there as well. A lot of good leguminous bushes out there. Let's see, buckthorn's one of them. There's a lot of other ones out there as well. That's one reason why I tell everybody, if you can, get the book Guy's Garden, the best instruction manual for a guild and all these wonderful things right there. There's like little indexes, tells you everything it does. So if you're new to this space, that's one of the things I would highly recommend. But yeah, folks, part of the reason I really want to address this is in every single way imaginable. And it's not just outside. It's not just out there. It's in our own lives. It's in our own bodies. I'm still beating out of my own head all of the reductionistic nonsense that I've had either implanted in me or just accepted over the years. It's beating that out of me and putting in what should be there. It's like bad doctrine, man. And I mean, that's really I could go down a serious rabbit hole with some of that. But like in my faith, you know, as a Christian American, heterosexual, pro-gun, liberty-minded permaculture designer, there's things I'd long believed and I now no longer believe them. And it's not, and what it really came down to was just poor training, poor acceptance on my part. There's things even in my own faith that I'd long believed that with examination, I'm finding out, huh, I was taught wrong. Or certain things about the world around me where I was led to believe or taught to believe that this is it. And then with the examination of myself, I'm starting to believe, oh, shoot, I got that wrong too. And I do that a lot. And we should all be okay with it. And part of it means dropping your ego. So when it comes to nitrogen fixtures in your landscape, it's completely up to you, but you're just going to have to decide which camp you're going to go with. Are you going to be in the holistic or the reductionistic camp? All right. So coming up here real soon, y'all, we got Keeper of the Old Ways. And when I say real soon, I'm talking this weekend. Keeper of the Old Ways down in Dothan, Alabama. Man, I really wish I could be there because that was a really awesome festival. Fantastic people. I think David the Good is going to be there as well. He was there last time I was there. And like I said, Dothan, Alabama, it is a very neat place, a very, very awesome setting that they have there for this event. A lot of stuff for kids. Go check it out. I had Jessica on the program to talk about it. So Keeper of the Old Ways will be this weekend. If you want to get on the first thing smoking down in Dothan, Alabama, tell them Billy said hi. And also not long after that, we got on May 3rd through the 5th is Mountain Readiness. And folks, I said it before, I'll say it again, it's the best festival you never even heard about. I am floored at how many unbelievable instructors they have out there. And I'm going to be busting out a new class of my own. This is going to be, well, it's going to be a tactical food force class in person. I'm going to have a PowerPoint and all that. But I'm hoping to get outside with some training aids and kind of walk people through what this looks like and how to set these things up. So this is something that I've only done on video before. Well, I've done it before in consultations and stuff back when I used to do that sort of thing. But now I'm going to be able to do a class on it, and I'm really excited of unveiling this, especially in these times, talking about a tactical food forest, how you put it to work for you, how you make it work. And then I'm also going to be helping somebody process a pig out there. To what extent? I'm basically going to be the backup dancer. Somebody else is going to be the primary instructor. But I think they need another capable hand who knows their way around this sort of thing. So I can't remember the lady's name, but she's going to be doing it. And I'm basically going to be doing whatever she tells me. So that's how that's going to go down. But we got some other things coming up too, y'all. And we're going to cover some of that in the main topic today. Want to remind you, y'all, before I get into the good news, I know I went a little long in this segment, but look, man, this is exactly why I do this podcast, because I can speak extemporaneously about all these things that really, really matter, I think. And so if I get a little long, hopefully you don't mind. So before we get into the good news, I want to remind you, Redemption Shield is 10% off with promo code PERMA. Those grounding mats, y'all, I mean, believe me, we use those things at least, I'll put it this way, at least three times every single day I'm using that mat. When I get up in the morning and I'm standing in front of that red night. There's number one. Midday, I make myself, no matter how busy I am, I make myself stop. And folks, I'm going to recommend this to a lot of other people out there. And if you're on a job site, it doesn't even matter. I mean, I used to do it back on the job site. Take your boots off. Get off the site for a minute. Go take your boots off. Lay on the ground if you possibly can. Take your boots off. Take your socks off. Get on the ground and do some deep breathing. You can either do Wim Hof, or there's this really, I mean, some of it's a little bit woo-woo, but there's this guy called Breathe with Sandy. And there's a couple of routines that he has on there, man, that really, really take you back to zero. But I go right back every, like I said, three times a day. I'll go in there, stop what I'm doing, make myself stop, do my deep breathing also on the grounding mat, especially like if it's like today where it's raining and I can't necessarily get outside. And then later on in the evening, I guarantee I'm sitting on that grounding mat and I'm sleeping on those grounded sheets that I also got from Redemption Shield, y'all. I remember, I'm a journeyman electrician with 25 years experience. I've been doing this a long, long time. When I reached out to all these companies saying, hey, you're going to send me some stuff so I can test it out? Redemption Shield was the only one that said, yeah, test it out. Let us know if it doesn't work. So that's why I reached out to them to be a sponsor on this show. So Redemption Shield, promo code PERA will get you 10% off. All right, so let's get into the good news. This one may, I think the implications could be bigger, but I want to kind of keep my powder dry as far as the full implication of what this might mean. And what I'm getting at is this one here seems to be breaking the internet right now. It's a CIA officer brags that the agency can, quote, put anyone in jail by setting them up. And they talk specifically about Alex Jones on there. Now, Alex Jones, he might be a good gateway drug for people just getting into this space. I don't trust the guy. I got a love-hate relationship with some of the information, but I don't know. There's certain things I've seen in him as of late that lead me to the conclusion that he's as controlled as many other people out there. And given his proclivities, I'm not that surprised about it. But anyway, point being is that this guy is literally, if you haven't heard it yet, the guy is literally telling whomever, some honeypot dude he was after, I don't know, he's basically telling them, in essence, you live in a police state. That's exactly what he's saying. And he's doing it in such this nasty, smug kind of way that you just want to reach through the phone and slap whoever this is. I mean, you just want to choke slam somebody who thinks this is okay. Well, you manufacture all this junk against people. So folks, think twice about it. Anytime they come down on somebody in the media, I always like to do, I mean, unless it's somebody like a Hunter Biden, and that guy's about as guilty as a cat in a goldfish bowl, unless it's a Hunter Biden or somebody else like that, I mean, you usually got to do your homework on some of this stuff. But I'm glad this is at least getting out, because maybe more and more people are starting to wake up and recognize the United States of Amnesia is not what you, it's not your mom and dad's or your grandparents' United States of Amnesia. It was bad then in its own little police state way, but folks, we're on a whole nother level right now. But I'm hoping that this information hitting the light of day is actually making a difference. I really hope it is. All right, so another good news segment here. Zimbabwe introduces a new currency, wait for it, backed by gold. Now, that's wonderful news in my book, but it's also dubious news, and I'll tell you why. Every world leader that backed their currency with gold right now is dead in the grave. I'm talking Gaddafi. He talked about having a gold-backed dinar. Same with Saddam Hussein. Second you start talking about taking money out of the pockets of the Rothschilds, you're probably going to wind up with a bullet in you. But other countries are doing the same, whether they're going to Bitcoin or whether they're going to gold. I'm hoping more and more of this happens. I mean, with all these BRICS countries, I mean, who knows what that'll act. It'll probably be backed by commodities and even gold itself. But Zimbabwe, I mean, it wasn't long ago, man, they were in like Weimar Germany territory. I mean, I forget how many Zimbabwe dollars was worth $1, and it wasn't that long ago. But the fact that they're wanting to peg it to gold, man, I give them a hat tip for that. But make sure you got your protection on point, because you are dealing with the filthiest of all filthy. And I'm just hoping and praying that it happens. But the historical standpoint doesn't, you know, it's not leaning in your favor, bro. So I'm going to call that good news. because at this point, if anything should happen, then it's going to stick out way more because it wasn't widely publicized what Gaddafi was doing. It wasn't widely publicized what Saddam Hussein was doing. So, like I said, you start talking about a currency based in gold, they're coming after you, nephew. So, yeah, I'm hoping they're not going to be able to sweep it under the rug this time. All right, so here's some another good news. Four natural solutions that help address cancer. And in this article, they're talking about, okay, allspice. Did not know that. Black walnuts. I did not know that because black walnuts, believe it or not, are my favorite nut of all time. You can ask Michelle, like in Kansas, man, we have black walnuts all over the place out there. Now, you're going to work to get the nut out there, believe me. So it's just better off buying them half the time, provided you can get them organic, which I don't know why they got to be anything other than that. But yeah, black walnuts, man, they are my favorite. But apparently they are awesome in cancer fighting. Here's one I never heard of is bloodroot. Actually, I think I have, but it's known to be a little bit poisonous. But then again, a lot of great things out there are poisonous in higher dosages. In fact, I mean, like even Sepp Holter says, grow as many poisonous things as you can around your animals. What you're going to find out is that they will partake of it. Sean and Beth Doherty talked about it too. They'll partake what they need, not enough to be toxic, but enough to get rid of whatever's ailing them. And then the last one here is parsley. There's one more I'd like to add, and I've been doing a little bit of research on it as of late, and it's apricot seeds. Man, I've been eating these, like I eat 10 of them a day. Boy, those things, you better mix them with something else, man, because they are absolutely positively bitter. And they got vitamin B12 or B17 in them. And people like, man, he's almost 100 years old. The guy that wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island, he swears by it. And a number of others. In fact, the guy who's really got him on the market right now, his dad was one of those doctors that was thrown in jail for curing cancer using things like this. And he basically says things that are typically bitter are usually really, really awesome in fighting cancer. So that's one of them too. And parsley to me kind of, I mean, parsley has like a fresh flavor, but it also seems a little bit bitter for the most part. But anyway, there's your good news right there. All right, before we get into the main topic, we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, to be right or to solve problems. A divided people are easy to manipulate. The media's main job seems to be to keep you afraid and hating your neighbor. Every election focuses on contentious issues to keep us divided, but offers nothing to solve the real problems we face. Understandably, we have lost all faith in our institutions. People don't see justice anywhere. So they resort to focusing on being right instead of solving problems. Being right is easy. You just blame everyone else for everything. If misery loves company, then victims love a party. And groups of over 3,000 people create mistrust, and stealing becomes commonplace. So why do we think we can have an effective government over 300 million people? Just as you have more influence over a small garden, so do you have more influence in your town or local community. Real change always starts from the bottom up. I saw a news report about a proposed mine in the Okefenokee wetlands of Georgia. The park's manager said the mine will destroy the wetlands and the tourism to the park. The mine just proposed jobs. I don't know anything about the mining company or what they're even mining, but mines are no friend to the environment. But instead of pitting the environment against mining jobs, why not create jobs and businesses that help support the wetlands? Then there is no need for the mine at all. Would you rather be in a dark hole all day or guiding tourists around a beautiful wetland? You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. And if you need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
That's my dog right there. Man, it's amazing how many times we overlap in some of this stuff. And I couldn't agree more, man. And for those that wonder out there, because I get asked this all the time, man, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not blue state. I'm not red state. It's the state against you. That's really what it comes down to. And yeah, when it comes to this, I mean, they're all sold out prostitutes, y'all, in the media. And they're all sold out profligate politicians. I mean, throw enough peas in there. Yeah, I don't play any of that. I mean, they're all sold out. They're all a bunch of garbage. And the idea is to keep us divided. But we got to find these solutions, just like Eric says. That's why I'm encouraging everybody to go to these festivals, to go to these gatherings. In fact, that's another thing we're going to be talking about. That's why I'm so heavy on this right now, y'all. All right, before we get into the main topic here, I want to remind you, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Once again, 25-year veteran, yes, of IBEW, Local 120-4. Yeah, I've been doing electric work for a long, long time. And folks, I'm here to tell you, I've installed a lot of transient voltage surge suppressors over my years. And I'm telling you what, there ain't even a close second to EMP Shield in my professional view. That's why I reached out to them. Once again, they did not reach out to me. I reached out to EMP Shield. So if anything gets blowed up downstream from your house, they're going to cover you for 25 G's. That's what I'm talking about. And obviously on your vehicle, something jumps off. Look, you're not going to go to the club, right? Not if you got any sense. You're going to go back to your house, or you're going to go to your bug out place. You're going to go wherever it is. Look, these days I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. With that, we'll get into the main topic. All right, time to get down to the nitty-gritty, y'all. Coming back, look, I talk often about how you should go to these festivals, how you should go to any gathering that's in your area, and how you should try as best you can, especially in these days, to get to know as many people as possible, especially people that are doing really awesome stuff. And I got to tell you, at the last farm where you live, I came across a couple of young folks. And I met them before, man, and they stuck out to me. In fact, when I saw them again, I immediately had to run over there and say hi just to see how their development was going. Because in this space, when you have old timers like me, man, it is such a joy to be able to see young folks that are really, really dedicated. And you can tell by the questions they ask when I previously met them, you can tell that they were off to do some wonderful, fantastic things. They had a property. In fact, you know what? I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm just going to bring them on here in a minute. And their names are Evan and Shelby. And here we are. You guys are live with me. How are y'all doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you, Billy, for having us on.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Well, it's a joy to have you both. As I was saying, I think I've met you guys twice now. And I saw you at the last one, and I had to immediately go up to you and say, hey, what's up? How's everything doing? But hey, you know what? We have limited time, so I'll tell you what. Why don't we just jump right into a little bit about you two? What brought you to this space? You know, give us a little bit of your background and tell us what brought you into, you know, what you currently do.
Currently, we have 22 acres. We're very blessed, but we had to move from Indiana to South Carolina to find it. So we kind of uprooted our whole lives and moved down here. I've always really loved and been obsessed with homesteading. Evan is newer to it.
I'm newer. I'm for sure a little bit newer. I did grow up a little bit with raising animals and doing small gardens, but kind of not on the scale that Shelby has had done in the past.
So now we do permaculture. We started very traditional gardening, and now we're really into permaculture. And you are one of the many people we have to thank for that.
Yes.
Well, I have you to thank, because honestly, it gives me such joy to be able to see such young folks. I'm saying you guys are young, but, and I don't know if you're okay saying this. I know you never ask a lady your age, but I know you guys are considerably, I'm probably old enough to be your dad. So just as a basis of reference for all the people that are thinking about, man, I don't know too much. I'm getting into this. I'm too old, or I'm too young. How old are you guys?
That's I'm 30, and she is 29.
Yep. Just turned 29.
Wow. Yeah, I am old enough to be your dad's, man. I'm feeling my age right about now. Man, I can smell the Similac on your breath from here. No, anyway, I'm kidding around, but honestly, so Shelby, I mean, you had a background in this. Evan, less so. Evan, did you get into this kicking and scratching, or how did you finally get on board with it?
So I got on board a little bit slower. I was slow to it. I was not fully prepared to do the whole jump to where we are right now. She was more into doing everything, homemade, everything, anything that you would buy at the store. If you could make it at home, that's what she wanted to do, is make everything at home. And I wasn't 100% on board with that. But as time has gone on, it has fully hit us like a train wreck, but in a great way.
I love making everything from scratch. And I'm really grateful, though, that he is really amazing at processing animals, because I don't necessarily love that part.
We have our strengths.
But sure. Yeah, we both have our strengths. He's maybe not the best at making a loaf of bread, but I can knock out a loaf of bread. But he can process an animal and break it down, and it's magical to me. But we are grateful that we both have our strengths. And I originally was really into horses, and I still am. I'm a hoof care practitioner. Now, since we moved down here, I had to learn how to trim my own horse's feet, and that's how that all started. So he's always been really great and supportive with the horses. And when you have horses, it kind of leads into more animals. So he kind of got really into animal husbandry after meeting me and helping with the horses.
For sure.
So do you guys, okay, so 29 and 30 respectively, I mean, do you still... are you managing what you're doing on the farm? Is this full-time, or do you have to have day jobs right now?
Right now, we still have our full-time day jobs.
Okay. We joke that the day jobs are part-time and farming is full-time.
For sure, yes.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. I mean, is the goal to transition into doing this full-time?
I really love my job. I really love taking care of people's horses and trimming them and helping them feel better. So I do want to keep doing that part-time, but I would love to be on the homestead the rest of the time. Yeah, absolutely.
And I can agree with that. I do like what I do. It's not that I don't like it more than farming, for sure, but sometime in the future, I would love to just be on the farm.
See, that's fantastic. I mean, if you can have the best of both worlds, I mean, nobody says you got to do this full time, unless, you know, if you're in a position where you hate your job. It sounds like both of you actually enjoy what you do. And if there's a way to be able to have the best of both worlds, it sounds like that's what you're after. So, yes. So how long have you been at this place?
4 years.
Nope. All right. So talk to me about the transition. How did you get to that? I mean, there's a whole lot of people, and the reason I'm asking this is there are record numbers, as you well know. Joel Salatin, his latest book, is talking about the homestead tsunami, and there's a big one going on right now. And so many people out there are thinking, man, I hate my 9-to-5 job, or I just don't love the place I live. Talk to me how you two made that transition. I mean, you didn't just wake up and say, hey, we're going to relocate to South Carolina. Walk me through that. How did that transition happen? And did you have family down here? Did you leave family behind? What did that look like?
We left everything behind. So we looked in Indiana for 4 years. So Indiana has really interesting laws because they don't want to lose the farmland, which is understandable. But you can only build a house on an acre or a parcel once. So you can have over 100 acres and one house on it, and it can never have more houses.
Wow.
So there's a severe housing crisis. And after looking for 4 years, lowering our expectations basically every year. Okay, we'd love to have 10 acres. Okay, that's not going to work. How about 5 acres? Okay, that's not going to work. We knew some people down here, and they invited us down, and we fell in love with Spartanburg. That's where we are now, is Spartanburg. And we fell in love with it. We're like, we are moving. So after this 1 week visit, we go back home, we tell everyone that we're moving. We bought a camper, and within like 2 months, we had moved down here. We only knew about four people, And it was just kind of crazy. But we're so grateful that we did it and took that jump because it's home.
Yeah,
it really is home.
It's paid off. It was a once in a lifetime thing that we talked it over. That would be like, if we don't do it this time in our life, then there probably won't be a second chance.
And we had the camper, so if it didn't work out, we could go back.
Or go down the road somewhere else.
Yeah, or move somewhere else. So.
Wow, I love that. I love that spirit, and that's exactly what it takes, folks. For all the ones that are reaching out to me saying, good night, how do I start? Where do I get going? Man, you just got to make a move. And so before you guys did that, I mean, were you saving a lot of money for a lot of years? Or, you know, what did that transition look like? Did you find something immediately? Or did you have to kind of find some place to live until you could find your forever home? How did that look?
Yeah, so Dave Ramsey'd it.
Yeah.
We were living as cheaply as possible to save up for a down payment and ended up using a good chunk of it towards the camper and then moved down and stayed at an RV, a very nice RV park. There's some really wonderful RV parks in the area because a lot of people are doing this. Mm-hmm. And we ended up staying there a year almost to the day.
Mm-hmm.
And found this place and closed on it. Like it was seriously almost to the day 1 year that we had to stay there, and it was great. We met people and it was a good time to kind of learn about building community, because the RV park was like a nice little tight-knit community. We all kept in touch and like, hey, did you see that, you know, weird car drive through? So that gave us a good taste of what a community could be like.
So, I'm sorry. So let me get this right. I mean, the place you found, was it exactly what you dreamed of, or did it need work? Is it perfect? I mean, what did it look like? Did it have a home there?
It was a fixer upper for sure. It was built in the 50s, and very little updating to the home itself had been done. The 22 acres, about an acre and a half, was cleared out. The rest of it was all wooded, and that was pretty much all that was on the property. So it was a work to even move in.
It was a fixer-upper for sure. The outside was very sad. The inside and the structure had great bones, but the outside was very sad. But it wasn't necessarily our dream home, but the land and the price was all within our budget. So we love it now. We've had the house, definitely we have not worked on it as much as we would like, because we prioritize animals and building things for our animals and working on the land. So the house, we've been working on it here and there, finally having some more time, and it is looking like our home now and not just a place we live. But we do love it. We love it now. And we loved it when we bought it. As soon as we stepped onto the property, after years of looking at so many houses, can't even count. As soon as we stepped here, we're like, we love this place.
It was really like a breath of fresh air.
It was so peaceful, and everything around it. As soon as you stepped on the property, we knew we wanted it.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people can't digest at first. These fixer uppers, you're not going to, I mean, especially most of us have more time than money. So it's better a lot of times. And man, people would be shocked at some of the places I've lived before, because you got to do what you can do and you'll turn it into something that's worthwhile. So it sounds like you guys are off and running. Now let's kind of transition into community, because you mentioned it a moment ago and you guys have something coming up that everybody should know about. Now, if we were at this Farm Where You Live event, and like I said a moment ago, I went up, had to say hi, see how you guys are doing. And then you made known to me that you got a little something coming up and everybody's invited. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yes. So my wife and I, we run Wisteria Springs Farm, and we're hosting an event. It's going to be in Spartanburg at Croft State Park. The event name is the Homesteader Gathering of Upstate South Carolina. The event is totally free. It will be on May 19th It will be from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. The only thing is for admission is for the park. That's $3 for children, $3 for adults, and $1 for children.
And that's good for the whole day. So if you want to go hiking or whatever, that's included in that park admission. And feel free to bring refreshments or snacks, desserts to share. And the pavilion that we've rented is right by a park for the kids. So it's very family friendly event. Okay. We just want people to come and get to know other homesteaders and start building community, because everyone in the homestead community that we've talked to wants to build community, but don't know where to start.
Yeah. And like, you would go to these events, like all these homesteading events, and you're always like wondering, hey, the person beside me, like they might be 2 hours from me or an hour. So we're going to also have name tags. You'll put your name down and either the county or the city that you're from, if you feel comfortable enough, so you can be like, oh, okay, this person is pretty close to me. This might be a good connection, a good community builder, just so everybody can kind of get to know where each other is.
It's not required if you're a really private person. You don't have to do it, but it would be helpful for people to really find those close people.
And what would be your motivation for doing this? I know that's something of I think I know the answer to that, but with everybody out there, you hear it all the time. Like, man, somebody should do something like this, or we should have a get together, and nobody ever steps up and do it. What was your motivation for even doing this?
You know, homesteading is difficult, and there's a lot of people coming into it without existing homesteading skills. Like, these skills used to be passed down generation to generation. It was all common knowledge, and it's really hard to learn them as an adult or not having any sort of mentor. So we just really, the community is really heavy on our hearts, and we want to help people and just get to know their fellow neighbors, and so that, you know, people can help each other. And, you know, community sufficiency beats self-sufficiency. We're all about self-sufficiency, but community sufficiency, the longer I think people are into homesteading, the longer they do it, the more they realize it's really hard to do everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we started the whole homestead alone, which we were comfortable with, but it seemed like it's gotten to a point that having a community is a best way to explain it would be,
you know,
you can go a lot further with a community than you can solo.
Yeah.
When we started, we were solo, and we were watching YouTube and Google and all this research online, which is great. Don't get me wrong. But if we had a mentor or a person that was there with us to help guide us or show us the wrongs and rights, or what they've done, wrongs and rights, that would have been very helpful.
Yeah, self-sufficiency is important, and it gives you a sense of contentment and self-worth. But when you can help others and share abundance and teach, it also gives you a sense of belonging and fulfillment that you didn't really know you even were missing out on until you have it.
Especially for so many people that are moving into new areas, or, you know, like yourselves, you kind of up, like us as well, you uproot yourself from where you are. You go to a new place. You don't necessarily know where that community is, and you're looking to find it. And if you can leverage social media or a podcast or YouTube, whatever the case may be, to be able to put butts in seats at some gatherings, good night, man. That's really what we need to be doing, especially in these times where, you know, things at the grocery store aren't going down in price. I mean, people aren't making any more money, and It doesn't even have to be that you're in some giant commune. Basically, a mutual assistance group is what I gather you're looking for. I mean, where people can settle down, kind of say, okay, well, I kind of meld with this person, or maybe this is somebody I want to avoid. And then you can decide from there. I guess that's really the impetus to this whole gathering, is to have at least a starting place. Am I pretty much right?
Yes. 100%. Just kind of, I guess, like the old neighbor system. You can always kind of count on your neighbor for if somebody needed help, and they could always count on you if something went wrong.
Yep, absolutely.
Man, I am so proud of you guys. I mean, and the developments you're making and the things you're putting together. How can people find more information? And I'm not sure if you're comfortable with it or not, but I would imagine there's going to be folks out there that want to reach out to you. And of course, I'll keep mentioning it at a certain segment in the show from now until the event. But once again, tell everybody where they can go, how they can contact you, and where this event's going to be.
Yeah, so the event is at Croft State Park, 2-4, May 19th. You can find, there is an event on Facebook. It's under the Homesteader Gathering of Upstate South Carolina. And then we also have an Instagram page where people can follow us and reach out. It's Wisteria Springs Farm. That's our farm name. And we also have an email if you don't have social media and you want more info or you have questions. It's Wisteria Springs Farm SC at gmail.com.
Now, you're going to have to spell Wisteria for me and probably for some others out there.
Okay. It's Wisteria.
All right. So we'll make sure as often as we can, we'll let everybody know. So I'm glad you have that option, not only the social media option, but there's a lot of people out there that really don't want to use Instagram, Facebook, or anything like that. So I'm glad you have an email option for those that might be interested out there. We'll definitely make sure everybody knows about it. If it's at all possible, maybe I can swing down there. We're going at 100 miles an hour, but it's just such a joy to be able to see you guys develop. And, you know, here you are running off, doing your own thing. And, man, I wish you all the success in the world. Is there anything else you need to tell people about this? I mean, like you said, it's like a BYO food and drink and everything else. And if you want to share it.
Yes. Yep. Yes. Just bring, if you want to share stuff, bring it or.
Bring friends, bring family, whoever's interested in homesteading. If you're new to it, if you're old to it,
just come, bring yourself, bring your family. You don't have to be a master at anything. You can be just obsessed with sourdough. That's okay. You're welcome.
Wow. Or, I mean, wherever you find yourself in this continuum, I mean, I would imagine you could be in an apartment dreaming about doing this and you can get out there, meet folks that are already off and running, maybe 10 years down the road. Maybe there's some old timer that's been doing it all their lives. I mean, that's the beauty about going to these things, folks, because it does your heart wonders.
Right.
I don't get out much. I really don't get out much. And so when I went up, when I saw you guys at the last event, it's almost like I say this all the time. It's almost something of a reunion every time you go to one of these gatherings because you come across people. You may not always remember their names or something, but you know their faces and you're like, okay, these are good people. I want to go up and say hi and see how they're doing and see how everything's unfolding. So, man, it is such a joy to see you guys because there are so many people saying, somebody should do this or somebody should put something together. And you're one of the rare few out there actually getting it done. So thank you so much for being on with me, Evan and Shelby.
Thank you so much for having us. Yes. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Hope for the best for you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the PimpCast. Okay. Welcome back. Man, it was really good to have those young folks on here, man. Man, I can't even begin to tell you how much joy they give me. So they're one of the people. They are several of the people out there trying to make a difference. They're just wanting to get community together. So, yeah, get out there, put the button, go check them out. All right, so the first question we got is from Matthew. He says, I've been enjoying watching your 30-bucket compost process on Patreon. I've been doing the 18-day method, but want to try this out. See, that Matthew's another young guy. And so proud of all you folks. I mean that because the older folks like me, man, we need to get this passed on. One of these days, y'all, I mean, provided we still got a planet, I really want to do some in-person stuff where we go in full, in-depth, in-person. I just need more space, at least like a barn. So we're working on that sort of thing to be able to do some of these in-person kind of classes. So anyway, he's been wondering what you do about a composting thermometer. There's some good ones out there. You don't use aluminum. Try to get stainless steel if you can. Number one, it cleans off easy. And honestly, as you're putting that, and you want to get one that's at least 3 feet long. I got some that are 3 feet and 4 feet long. And Rio Temp is the one I use, and it's over $100. It's been a while since I bought one. And the cool thing about it is you can recalibrate them, and you should every once in a while. So Rio Temp is what I use, and I'm going to highly encourage you to definitely not buy the ones off the doggone shelf. Man, I'm telling you, don't make that mistake. They bend, you hit something hard in there, it just doesn't work. The stainless, you got to really work hard to bend that thing, and it seems to maintain a much better even temperature. And you want to have your compost temperatures pretty close. And I've had some of those cheaper thermometers in the past. I've tried to get away cheap, and there could be sometimes and there's no way to adjust them. If you can't adjust it, I mean, you could either put it in a cold water, figure it out, stick it in boiling water, then you find out exactly where your set point ought to be. So I wouldn't go cheap on compost thermometers. I really wouldn't, because I've seen a 10-degree difference in that. And believe me, that can make all the difference in the world if you're using temperature to judge how you're going to turn your compost and how you should mitigate excess heat or not enough. So let's go on to Mark. He says, hey, Billy, what are you using to train the limbs of your trees? Appears to be some kind of wire, as I can tell in your videos. I've tried Romex, and it's too soft. Okay, so what I used were these, they're like plastic-covered metal hangers. It was what I had at the time, and it's really not the best thing in the world. You really, if you're going to do any kind of tree training, you always want to use metal. That was one of the cool tricks I learned from Stefan Subkowiak, in that if you use metal and you forget about it, the tree will grow into it and it won't kill it. But I've nearly killed trees in the past. I might have even done it when I've used like 550 cord. For some reason, and I'm not sure we know why, it will grow metal. It'll just adjust to metal, but it won't. So that plastic covered hanger is not the best thing in the world, but it was what I had on hand. But your best option is to go out, go buy some galvanized or stainless, get a coil of it at a farm store, of number 12 or number 10 wire. I kind of lean towards number 10 because I like it more stout. Get some number 10 galvanized, and then just kind of fold it and cut it into what you need. In Stefan's course, he shows you, you know, he does all his like pre-measured, like I think one's 2 feet long, one's 3 feet long. I tend not to do that, but yeah, that's what it is. So you want to avoid using plastic hangers. I really need to get them off of there because that's really not the best example. But I'm watching it so closely, and in fact, I'm about to take those off because it ought to be pretty well trained by now. All right, so we got another one here. Man, I always love getting pictures from you folks. Tocoa Farm, they got blueberries here in the ground, and hell, I love. Oh, check this out. I got a Heaven's Harvest box on there. I can't believe I just now saw that. But basically, it's a blueberry, and they got cardboard all the way around it. And looks like they are doing a fantastic job. That's what I'm talking about. Man, I love seeing that stuff. Let's see here. What else we got here? My man over in Holland. So he sent me this video, and I'll try to describe it. It's basically one of those man on the street things, but they're talking to college students, and they're asking simple questions like, hey, if you were born 12 years ago, how old would you be? And they don't even know. I mean, simple other questions. I'm like, man, maybe I need to get over to Europe, man. so it's pretty crazy stuff. So we got another one here. And let's see here. It's from Rena. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Let's see here. It says, hi there. Find your videos very motivating. Thank you. And basically what she's saying here is, I live in a little city yard with 30-year-plus apple tree. Well, they basically have an apple tree. And the neighbor has, I'm going to kind of paraphrase this, they got a pine tree that's basically dropping all these pine cones over here, and it's looking like this apple tree is not going to make it. Well, I'm going to suggest something that might be a little bit, it might sound a little bit crazy, but in permaculture, it all depends, and nobody ever wants to hear that. but it's the best I can do without actually having seen it. So if there's no way you can mitigate what's going on with that pine tree, then maybe consider switching over to blueberries. It ought to be quite acidic over there, and it might be your better option. I know you have limited sunlight, which could be a problem with the blueberries, depending on where you live. I would try to figure out what works well in that environment. I know that's not the answer you want to hear, but I need way too much more information than you could provide in that email. But it does help. It really does help if you're able to, if you're able somehow to find out what will work in that situation, because there's always something. May not be your primary thing, but I'm sure that apple tree is not exactly loving the conditions over there. So it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. If you really love that apple, maybe get some cuttings off of it, grab some trees in a place that isn't shaded. I know you have limited space there, but do the best you can. There's always something. And better yet, see if you can't talk to your neighbor, if there's some way you can come to an agreement on it. If you love this tree that much, maybe one of the best ways to get people to be, you know, to win friends is say, look, hey, I'd be happy to give you some of these apples. But man, this pine is really killing me over here. You think maybe we can go in on this together? I mean, see if it's a hazard to them. It might very well be a hazard for them. So maybe there's some way you can work together with these folks and try to find some good space there. All right. So let's see here. We got another one from Julie. And check this out, man. She's down in Toya, Texas, which is not far from the border of Mexico. And in a long story short, man, she's got neighbors around her. They got MS-13 tattoos all over. And yeah. That ain't wonderful. And it's not like anybody's really caring about what's going on at the border. The way I see it down there, look, you got two options. You can either stand and fight, but apparently she's moving up to Oklahoma. And yeah, man, it's just awful to hear that stuff because I know a lot of people that live near the border. Some of them seem to be having problems. Others just seem to not even notice at all. There's always high Hispanic populations and stuff down there, but man, when you start seeing MS-13 tattoos on people, that's a problem. That is definitely an issue. So, and it seems to be, from what I'm gathering, it seems that Julie's by herself. So if you can get out of Dodge, maybe that's the best way to go about it. Because as I looked at Toya on the map, there ain't a whole lot going on in that town. I mean, there ain't a whole lot going on around it. And I know you're driving a truck and all, but yeah, man, if you can possibly get out of there and get off to a new place, I would seriously consider it because it's not like, well, I mean, it's like Eric said a little bit ago, your solutions are going to be in community. You can't expect the feds, even though that is their job, is border security. You can't expect them to do anything. And most town governments are so sold out, but that's the place where you're going to make the most influence. So I would give it a shot there if it's at all possible. All right, well, prayers to Julie and all the other folks out there that are going through so much. Hopefully this show was a blessing to you. Hey, remember, give us a 5-star rating wherever you're listening to this and tell other people about it because, believe me, the powers that shouldn't be do not want me out there saying what I say. So until next time, stay alert, stay alive. Yeah.